Carl Azus with your down-the-middle explanation of world news. To what extent should the U.S. government's recommendations be followed when it comes to mask mandates in schools? Right now, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a government agency, recommends universal masking, meaning everyone in school is urged to wear one. The Biden administration says the same thing. It supports masking in schools. But the White House also says it's always been up to local school districts to decide whether they'll follow the government's guidance. And the results have been mixed across America. Some states require masks to be worn in schools. Some have banned mask wearing in schools. And some have rules on this that just aren't being enforced. It's the same thing in individual districts. Some require masks, some don't. Some let students and teachers decide for themselves. But with their COVID cases decreasing, governors in several states that currently have school mask mandates are moving to get rid of them, even though it goes against federal guidelines. Critics of federal health officials say they haven't been clear enough about those guidelines, that they haven't updated them often enough, or that these recommendations don't make sense for all schools. A CNN medical analyst says if the CDC's recommendations aren't being followed, it hurts the credibility of the agency and government health officials. For its part, the CDC says its guidance is, quote, meant to supplement, not replace, any other safety laws and regulations, and that it continuously reviews pandemic and scientific information when deciding on its recommendations. One medical expert interviewed by CNN says communities should look at local COVID case counts and hospitalization rates when deciding what they'll do about masks in schools. 10-second trivia. Besides the ISS, what is the heaviest object people have ever sent to space? Skylab, Mir, Hubble, or the Apollo Command Service Module? The Soviet and later Russian space station Mir had a mass of almost 286,000 pounds. Since 1971, hundreds of pieces of old space equipment, including Mir and Skylab, have been intentionally crashed at Point Nemo. It's an area so remote and so far from inhabited land that oftentimes the closest people to it are those flying overhead on the International Space Station, 227 miles over the ocean's surface. Space experts say Point Nemo's the safest place on Earth to crash something from space. Planes and ships passing through the area are warned in advance, and when it comes to space junk, a dump is something that's badly needed.
After decades of launches since the dawn of the space age, Earth's orbit has become a junkyard of dead satellites and abandoned rocket bodies. And any time two objects traveling at about 5 miles a second collide, the impact could look like a scene straight out of the movie Gravity. In real life, no people in space have ever been hit, but the International Space Station has. In 2016, a small piece of debris cracked a window on the orbiting outpost, and in December, its crew prepared for an emergency evacuation after a Russian anti-satellite missile test created a massive debris cloud.
We will need to activate Dragon Safe Haven.
Today, U.S. Space Command is tracking more than 40,000 objects in space, and only about 5,000 of them are active satellites. The vast majority of space junk still in orbit is from the two major players in the first space race, Russia and the United States.
If these spacecraft were left there by the U.S. government, and in general they were, then that becomes their responsibility to clean it up. And in the same way that the military would not leave a broken down tank on the battlefield, nor would it go ahead and leave a ship, a derelict ship at sea.
But so far, the effort to clean up space has been led by Japan and the European Space Agency and private companies. Some companies, like ClearSpace, are trying to grab debris with robotic tentacles. Others are trying to catch it with a massive fishing net. And in August, a company called Astroscale successfully tested capturing a small satellite with a magnetic arm.
We use a robotic arm that extends and attaches to that metallic plate. That allows us then to basically perform a tow truck or a tug service, bringing that satellite down to a safe distance, and then we can release it to naturally and safely burn up in the atmosphere.
Astroscale caught the attention of the Prince of Wales, who visited its UK-based mission control last week. The company now has debris removal contracts with the UK, the European Union, and Japan.
In the U.S., unfortunately, we haven't seen and we haven't gotten as much traction from the U.S. government.
But the Biden administration is starting to change that. In January, the White House held meetings with experts about how to clean up space, and the Space Force is launching a program called Orbital Prime that will give companies the seed funding to do it.
Our vision in this partnership is to aggressively explore those capabilities with you today in the hope that we and others can purchase them as a service in the future.
The fact that Americans plan to spend almost $24 billion this Valentine's Day only tells part of the story. That number works out to $72 per person for everyone in the country, but not everyone plans to celebrate. Counting only the people who do, the average amount of spending jumps up to more than $175 per person. And this is not a record, according to the National Retail Federation. That was set in 2020 with the COVID pandemic looming in America. In that year, Valentine's celebrants spent almost $200 each on average. But if you're feeling pressured to spend a lot, remember that money isn't everything. According to personal finance website WalletHub, 54% of Americans say they'd break up with their significant others if they spent too much.
Six blocks with dozens of wholesale flower vendors.
Just checking out to make sure everything's good.
Business in the Los Angeles Flower District really blooms in February. So much that the California Flower Mall, one of the district's large markets, will stay open round the clock from Super Bowl Sunday through the end of Valentine's Day.
It's a good feeling, you know. It's like you're buying flowers for somebody you care about. So all of that really helps, you know, despite the economics.
Owner Mark Chanoff says his 35 vendors face the same thorny economic issues as any other retailer, as growers and suppliers count down to a second pandemic-era Valentine's Day.
We are facing rising costs, logistics, transportation, which is part of logistics, shortages.
Versane Bustos brings flowers to the Los Angeles market from local growers, but also items like roses from South America. He says disruptions to those air shipments are unlike anything he's seen in his 30 years in the flower industry.
One airline cancels, then whoever is behind it got the pressure to pick up what's behind.
And the high demand holiday falling on a Monday this year puts on the pressure, especially for florists tasked with final delivery.
Those are 2021 problems that are continuing into 2022, but it does get more difficult at Valentine's Day.
Well, don't let this bug you, but researchers recently filmed chimpanzees catching insects and then putting them on injuries. Could this be a form of animal medicine? There are a lot of questions here. For one thing, are bugs effective medication when it comes to healing wounds? That might need some research. For another, this could be a first for science. Even though animals have been known to take care of their young or apply medicine, like plants, to themselves, these apes have never been observed applying medicine to another chimp before. In fact, an animal has never been observed applying insect matter to another animal's wounds before. So if that's what was happening here, scientists think it could be a form of empathy, a sign of individuals caring for others. The video was captured at Luongo National Park in the African nation of Gabon. For today's 10 out of 10 segment, we're going for the gold, and it has nothing to do with the Olympics. This is Goldens in Golden Day, the first part relating to golden retrievers, the second relating to the city of Golden, Colorado. One participant, a human, said she thought it was the best holiday there ever was. My border collie would snap at that, but there's no question that this retrievers a lot of popularity and a lot of publicity. But could Goldens in Golden inspire other related events? Consider Aussies in Australia, Bostons in Boston, Chihuahuas in Chihuahua, Dalmatians in Dalmatia, English Foxhounds in England, French Bulldogs in France, German Shepherds in Germany, Havanese in Havana, Irish Setters in Ireland, Jack Russells in Jackson, King Shepherds in Kingston, Labradors in Labrador, Maltese in Malta, Newfoundlands in Newfoundland, Otterhounds in Ottawa, Papillons in Papillion, Queenslands in Queensland, Rotties in Rotterdam, Shibas in Shiba, Tibetans in Tibet, Utonicans in Utah, Vizslas in Visalia, Whippets in Whipple, Zolos and Sholo, Yorkies and Yorkshire, and Zweig Pinchers and Zweigen, we've gone to the dogs from A to Z. One more we missed, though. Plots in Plattsburgh, because Plattsburgh, New York is where we are shouting at you, Plattsburgh High School. I'm Carl Azus for CNN.